What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and Connor Newt here with you. Very excited to welcome in our next guest. One of the founding fathers of football analytics, Aaron Schatz of FTN Fantasy. The 2026 FTN Football Almanac is now available at FTNFantasy.com. And Aaron, I did share your note with Derek that you called him one of the all-time most underrated players in NFL history. And I have to tell you, he's got a major pep in his step today after hearing that.
Absolutely.
Good, man. Deserves it. He's a great player. I don't remember when. I wrote something from ESPN about underrated players at one point, and I had you either on the top or near the top. It was like 10 or 11 years ago. But, yeah, man, you had a great career.
Hey, man, listen, I take my flowers while I'm alive. Thank you.
So, Aaron, I think you would be well-equipped to answer this question. We had a caller yesterday ask us if Cam Ward had the worst supporting cast of any number one overall pick quarterback in recent NFL memory. I know you attempted to tackle this question for ESPN a couple of years ago. As we were debating the question, the first player who immediately came to mind was David Carr with the expansion Houston Texans. But based on your analysis, when you're evaluating Cam Ward's supporting cast, was it as bad as it appeared to be for Ward last season?
Not based on what we knew going into the season, right? Like, once you played the season, you were like, oh, Ridley's not himself, and Lockett doesn't seem to have it anymore, and I don't know what Jefferson's got left, right? You were like, oh, none of this is working out. But based on what you knew going into the season, he actually had one of the better supporting casts of a number one overall pick. Compare what he had to, like, what Drew Bledsoe had in 1993. His number one receiver was Michael Timpson, who was coming off of 315 yards, and then he had two rookies. Whereas going into the year last year, Ward had Ridley coming off a 1,000-yard season, and then you thought they would get more out of Lockett and Jefferson, right? It ended up being that the two and three receivers were Iomanor and DK, but you didn't think that. And, you know, Okonkwo gave him a good tight end, and Pollard gave him a good running back, so it's nowhere near in the David Carr area of really terrible supported casts.
Aaron, I know a lot of Titans fans are hoping that with the arrival of Robert Saleh, he can help the Titans defense improve dramatically as they try to get things back on the right track. Based on your analytical evaluation of the Titans defense this past season, the additions they've made since the end of last season, and Saleh's history as a defensive coordinator, what would be a reasonable expectation for improvement for the Titans defense? Do you think that Saleh and the new players, Jeffrey Simmons, of course, back as well, can bring this unit up to at least league average, or is that asking too much year over year?
No, actually, our projection for them is to be league average. Yeah, we think that they can absolutely bring it up to league average. Saleh, you know, does have a good track record, but more importantly, just the amount of stuff that they added, you know, having Simmons back healthy, it's interesting. Draft picks on defense have a more predictable effect on your team than offense. Right? Offense, you never know if guys are going to click right away. Defense, they tend to help right away. So the fact that they've got the first-round edge rusher and the second-round linebacker, these are good things, the free agents that they added. So, yeah, we have the Titans defense definitely improved.
We'll talk with Aaron Schatz of FTN Fantasy Football. And if you want to check out a good read and if you love analytics, go check out the Almanac because it is filled with all of that. Now, Aaron, after reading bits and pieces of it, I saw on there that you had from 2011 to 2025 a list of the top five quarterbacks in a DVOA. The way we talked about Cam this season, it would have made it seem like Cam had the worst of any quarterback out there within the last 10 years, but it's not that way. But what did you see based upon those numbers the next following year for those quarterbacks? Did they get better or did they get worse? Because a lot of times we're looking at Cam and we're looking at the numbers and the analytics and everything seems to match up. So we're wondering, how will he be the next following season?
I mean, they almost always get better. Mm-hmm. You know, not always, but rookie seasons are rookie seasons. Now, look, I mean, you didn't bring in an offensive genius. So you're not going to see, Dable is good, but I don't think you're going to see what happened with Jared Goff with the Rams, who was like the worst quarterback for a top five pick of the last 15 years. And you don't know. He could be bad. He could be Zach Wilson or something. But we don't think he is. We think he's better than that. But how much? That's the problem. Is he'll improve, but if he only improves a little bit, that's not enough for them to be a playoff contender. The projections generally don't think that the Titans are going to be playoff contenders, but you can tell a story where they are, right? Some teams that project to be bad, it's really hard to imagine how that changes, like the Dolphins, right? Whereas with the Titans, new coaching staff plus number one overall pick quarterback in his second year, it's not likely that it gets much better, but it's possible that it gets much better.
Now, you mentioned Jared Goff and him going from, you know, having one of the worst, if not the worst, DVOA to him getting better the next following year. We know coaches change. How much of having Dabo now as his OC, meaning Cam Ward, how much do you think that will help Cam Ward in the DVOA department?
I mean, I think it's better. Luke Callahan's offense was, like, really bad in the first half of last year. Mm-hmm. It just was really bad. Like, it's hard to imagine it's going to be that bad again. Now, it's hard to predict what coaches are going to do in new situations because you've only seen them in one or two situations. We've seen Dable run the Giants offense, and we've seen him run the Bills offense. Those were two very different offenses as far as their quality. So it's hard to say how much he brings. But the situation was so bad last year that it's hard to imagine it's not going to be better.
We're talking to Aaron Schatz, FTN Fantasy Almanac, and it is out. We are yearly subscribers to this. We're checking it out right now. Aaron, one of the things that you guys noted, and it's something that Titans fans will be watching, is the acquisition of Wandale Robinson. And he has kind of a dubious award from you guys, because if you look at the catches and the yards, at first glance, it looks okay on the surface, but there needs to be some improvement in the area of success rate. Can you explain that to our listeners there, what you're looking for?
Yeah, with the Giants, he was the champion of what we call failed completions, which is completions that don't result in a successful play. 45% of how many yards you need on first down, 60% on second down, 100% on third or fourth down. He had a lot of these 3-yard catches on second and eight kind of thing that really didn't do much to move the sticks. So I understand he's the short possession guy, but he's got to get a little bit more downfield than he did with the Giants.
So do you think there's any way that they could use him? They describe, one of your writers describes in the essay, the visual of the quick throw, he catches it and is immediately tackled for a 2-yard game, which is better than a 2-yard loss or an incompletion. But like you said, it's not getting in the big picture where you need. So what adjustments can they make how could they get more out of him?
I mean, some of it is, he's got to get open better, but some of it is scheming. You know, the hope is obviously Tate and Ridley, you know, stretch the field a little bit more so that the defenders can't all just hang out underneath and wait. I mean, with the Giants, he was their number one receiver. So, like, everybody could just hang out at 3 yards and wait for him to catch a short pass. Hopefully, with the Titans, that is not the case.
One of the things you guys have chronicled over the years is the running back usage and how it's evolved. You don't have that bell cow anymore, and history shows if you work a guy too hard, he falls off the cliff. It's interesting that Derrick Henry has avoided the fate of a lot of guys after, even though he did get hurt, but now he continues to be really good. It was interesting that you guys pointed out over the last 4 years, the only two running backs who have had over 1,000 yards in each of the four seasons are Derrick Henry and his replacement, Tony Pollard. What do you think the what do you expect out of Tony Pollard at this stage of his career?
Probably something similar, I would think. You know, I mean, he's shown a really good ability to stay healthy. Now, I don't know, you know, you can't do anything about the sudden crazy injuries. You know, you break a leg or something. But when it comes to the nagging stuff, he's shown a really good ability to stay healthy. And, you know, one of the best abilities is availability. So that is what he gives you. He's not anyone's idea of a running back who really moves the needle, but he's also not bad. And so having him healthy and available is a good thing.
Quickly, I want to ask you, Aaron, about the DVOA. Now, our listeners they hear this and they hear the term, but they don't know the actual definition of it, because if they look at your almanac, they see the Titans' offense was negative 18, but they see their defense was just 13. So why is a negative, you know, for offense bad, but a positive for defense bad, being good?
Because it means less efficiency and less scoring. Mm-hmm. So on defense, the goal is to stop the offense, right? So mm-hmm. less scoring. And on offense, the goal is more scoring. So on offense, you want a positive number. And on defense, you want a negative number. But what we do throughout the book and in my writing online as well is I try to always give ranks. Mm-hmm. Because if I tell you that they were minus 18, you don't know what that means. But if I tell you they were 29th, you know what that means. Mm-hmm. So I like to give things in terms of ranks of 1 to 32, because you know 29th is bad, 3rd is good, etc.
Aaron, last year, one of the things that we tried to factor in as we evaluated Cam Ward especially is that they played, especially for a team that got the number one pick to get Cam Ward, they played a relatively difficult schedule as things fell. They played the NFC West, so they played the Seahawks and the Rams and the 49ers, and they faced a lot of tough defenses. How do you guys try to project strength of schedule?
Yeah, we try to project strength of schedule by looking at our projections, which account for personnel changes. So you hear a lot that projecting strength of schedule based on last year is sort of useless. And that is kind of true, but you don't want to project based on last year. You want to project based on what you think will happen this year. And it's not perfect. Last year it wasn't very good, but a lot of years it is fairly accurate to project schedule strength. And we do have the Titans with a very average schedule this year, as opposed to the really hard schedule that they had last year.
And with that said, the division you play in is important. You guys really like the Houston Texans, I noticed. Tell us why you think the Texans are not just good, but you think they could be really good.
Yeah, believe it or not, C.J. Stroud was 11th in passing DVOA during the regular season. I know we all remember those playoff games, and they were terrible. I mean, you know, there's no way around it. But you learn more from an entire season than you do from two playoff games. And he was a good quarterback. He was a good quarterback behind a bad offensive line with no running game to speak of. Now he should have a better offensive line and a better running back, right, which gives them more balance, which frees things up for him a little bit. I think that they could definitely be an above-average offense. And when you combine that with the defense that they have, that's the best team in the AFC.
Aaron, before we let you go, as you obviously know, it's seemingly every year an NFL team goes from worst to first in its division. The Titans, of course, are trying to do that again. When you look at the other teams around the NFL who are trying to do the same thing, the Jets, the Browns, the Raiders, the Giants, the Lions, the Saints, the Cardinals, I assume your analytics would say that the Lions probably have the best shot of going to from worst to first, just because of the general strength of that team. But what other teams that finished last in their division next year do you think have a really good chance of turning things around?
I mean, I don't think other than the Lions that any of them have a really good chance. But like I said, you have the story you can tell. The best recipe for a team to make a massive improvement is a new coaching staff and a young quarterback who can get better. Or be awesome in his rookie year in the case of Fernando Mendoza. So you can't tell that story about the Jets. You can't tell that story about the Browns. You can about the Giants. You can about the Titans. You can about the Saints. It's possible for those teams to make the leap. It's just not likely, as opposed to the Lions, who were honestly a very good team last year and finished last at 9-8 because of tiebreakers, right? So, like, they're obviously by far the favorite to go from worst to first.
Aaron Schatz of FTN Fantasy has been our guest on D-Mace Vingan and Donick. You can find the 2026 FTN Football Almanac now at FTNFantasy.com. Aaron, thank you so much for your time. We'll have to do this again soon.
Print version also on Amazon, so check it out.
All right.
Thank you.
615-737-1025. We'll react to what Aaron had to say. You can as well. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. A big thank you to Aaron Schatz of FTN Fantasy for joining the program. A lot of information there. I mean, that kind of stuff is music to my ears. Willie's as well, because we're big old nerds. So Aaron Schatz developed a statistic for football that is used by basically every person who writes about football from an analytical perspective. It's called DVOA. And the ultra short version of explaining DVOA is this. It measures a team's efficiency by comparing success on every single play to a league average based on situation and opponent. And you can look at it offensively. You can look at it defensively. You can look at it on special teams as well. We had Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com on the program yesterday. He is a disciple of Aaron Schatz. They both worked at what was called Football Outsiders at one point, Willie, if memory serves.
That's correct.
So Aaron Schatz, he knows what he's talking about. A lot to digest there. A couple of things that stand out first. He is very bullish on the Houston Texans. And Derek, you made a good point during the break. That we had this conversation a few weeks ago. We played a fun game talking about, would you rather take Cam Ward and the potential or this quarterback right now? And we asked about C.J. Stroud. And C.J. Stroud came off of a horrendous postseason for the Texans. So many turnovers. So I think the public perception of Stroud and the Texans is, I don't know if the Texans should commit to Stroud. I don't know if they're that good. But, Willie, Aaron was quite high on the Houston Texans.
He loves their defense. Mm-hmm. And we've had a couple of shows where we have asked the question, because this has been one of the offseason league topics, is are we going into a cycle where you can win with a good quarterback and a really, really good defense? And I think that's what he's seeing. This looks like, you know, these last couple years, you can win big if you have a great defense and just a good offense. And he thinks C.J. Stroud is more than just good. He thinks he's not the problem. This is Aaron Schatz's take on it based on what he just told us. But they have a tremendous defense, right? They can really go get them. You know, the Titans scored, 6 points in 2 games against them last year? I mean, they really struggled to get anything done offensively against them. So they can win on a given week, the Texans can, without lighting the scoreboard up. But if they can just make modest improvements and show, like we talked about, Derek, on Friday, you don't have to be great every week, but you have to be capable of great games at key times. And Stroud certainly has the talent to do that. So I can see it. Best team in the AFC, boy, you'd probably get a lot of pushback there, but it may not be crazy.
No, it may not be, because we're looking at, we all to a certain extent have recency bias, and we look at C.J. Stroud, and we saw a horrible postseason. So in our mind, it was he didn't develop during the season. Well, Aaron, the analytics and the DVOA showed that yes, he was developing during the season. Yes, he was a really good quarterback during the season. It was just in the postseason that everything seemed to fall apart. Now, they had their own issues with the offensive line and injuries and everything else. But based on his numbers tracking the season, he was a good quarterback in this league. And I wonder if that's the same thing with Cam, but sort of in the reverse from this standpoint. Because the first 7-8 games were ugly. ugly. Everything was ugly. Cam said it was ass. Everything. I would have chose that he used another word, but either way.
It was ass.
Yes. but we look at that, and because of how bad it was, it overshadowed anything that he did in the second half of the season. People were just waiting for the season to be over. So where you wasn't looking at it through the lens of how is he developing through all of this mess that's going on. And I saw, and the numbers do bear it, that, but it's not like he went from worst to first, but he got better in the second half. Those things that he was doing in the first half of the season, he wasn't doing necessarily in the second half. So when I look at Cam's DVOA, I think that this is a quarterback that showed over the course of the season, and that's why I asked him the question about the top five quarterbacks in the last 15 years. How did they do subsequently the next season? We look at Bryce Young. He was horrid his first season. Changed coaches. He got better. Led his team to a playoff. Now, was it solely because of him? No, but he made plays when he needed to make them. I wonder if that's what we're going to see from Cam moving forward. New coordinator, new head coach, systems new, add some better players. Will he go from being almost the worst when it comes to DVOA to the best? No. But if you see developing in there, that's all you want.
So to that point that Derek just made, Willie, in the Titans section of the Almanac, worst rookie passing DVOA by a top five pick between 2011 and 2025. Cam Ward, fifth on the list. Jared Goff in 2016, number one with the Rams.
Meaning the worst.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Number one is the worst.
Number one in a bad way.
Yes. Blake Bortles with the Jaguars in 2014, number two. Bryce Young with the Panthers in 2023, number three. And then Zach Wilson with the Jets in 2021, number four. Cam Ward comes in at number five in terms of the fifth worst passing DVOA by a rookie top five pick between 2011 and 2025.
And they went back to 2011. Mm-hmm.
So they can include Marcus Mariota. It even says that in the write-up.
And Marcus Mariota was better than Cam Ward his rookie year, but no great shakes. But the point was, usually rookie quarterbacks struggle.
Yes.
Especially top five when you're in theory, most of the time you're coming onto a roster that's not very good to start with. So it's a lot of the things. One of the things I thought was great about the whole breakdown of the Titans is a lot of the numbers that they share fall right in line with other analytic sites of specific things. A, not getting the ball out quickly, not getting the ball out on time, not taking the easy passes that should be high percentage throws that get you modest but important gains. He did not do well on those. He had a lot of passes that basically they grade as no chance. No chance of being caught, basically throwaways. So a lot of the things that the eye test would tell you and other sites have shown, PDF has that, or I'm sorry, FTN falls in line with that. So we know, I think there's, you know specifically where he's got to get better and the offense needs to get better. So now we'll see if Daboll and his crew can make improvements.
The other thing, too, that he mentioned, Aaron Schatz, that is, during our conversation, and it's also in the write-up about the Titans in the Almanac, FTN Fantasy isn't as high on Brian Daboll as I think a lot of Titans fans want to be. Here is part of their explanation. Quote, Ward as a prospect is miles above most of the players Daboll has gotten to work with before. You would expect Ward to eventually have better than baseline seasons once Daboll gets a chance to work with him for a while. But if you're going to bring with you that quote-unquote offensive guru label, it would be nice if you had some results you could point to without MVP caliber play from your quarterback. Something where your play calling or your system elevated the results beyond the sum of the talent on the field. Daboll has never pulled that off, and that's a significant part of the reason he chose Tennessee over some of the other opportunities he had.
You don't think, I mean, and listen, I'm not going to argue with the numbers, but you don't think that was the case in New York?
With Daniel Jones?
Yeah, it wasn't. Daniel Jones, he wasn't the best of quarterbacks at all. And it wasn't like he was littered with talent. Yes, they had Saquon Barkley. That's when Daniel Jones had his best season as a Giant. But it's not like, you know, he went in there and didn't do anything.
Well, according to FTN Fantasy, Daboll has only had 3 seasons out of 12 with an above-average offense, 2 with Josh Allen, and then just barely in 2022 with the first Daniel Jones renaissance.
But I would that's okay, what was those DVOAs of those quarterbacks? That's what I would want to know too, because is it the coach that is contributing to the DVOA, or is it the quarterback that is doing it? Because
it is hard to quantify the impact of coaching. Exactly. I think that's a point he made with us. It's hard to quantify the impact of coaching. I heard friend of the show Nick Suss say this recently. And Derek, you tell me if you agree. Suss said, if you are not one of the top 5 coaches or one of the bottom 5 coaches in the NFL, your impact on Sunday is, I don't want to say, I don't want to put words in his mouth. I don't want to say negligible, but unless you're one of the best or one of the worst, your impact on Sunday is not significant.
I would say that's not true. Because again, when you're talking, just because we got a top 5, what about, you know, 6 through 10? Those are still playoff teams. Those are still teams that are winning ball games. So what happened to those coaches in the middle? And again, listen, you have some coaches. Every coach has a different title, so to speak. Some are offensive coordinators. Some are defensive coordinators. Some are there to be managers of the whole team. So a guy that is supposed to be a guru from offensively, and he's your head coach, you would hope that what he does, you know, help the team during the game more than anybody else outside of him. I mean, the other coaches. But that doesn't mean that Campbell from Detroit, he's neither a offensive genius nor a defensive genius. And he's not a special teams genius. But what he does every game helps them win. It's a big part of allowing it, putting the team in a position to win, whether you're a play caller or not. I don't want to minimize a coach's ability because, yes, when it comes down to the X's and O's, some coaches are better than others. But in those critical times when, yeah, we may have the right X or the right O, but we got to make sure this team is together. We got to make sure this team know down the distance. We got to make sure this team know how important it is. A head coach of any ilk, you know, that's their job. That's what they're there to do, to motivate and make sure everything. They're a CEO, to make sure everything is one. Now, some are a little better than others, but I'm not going to sit here and say, even Brian Callahan, he helped at times, but he hurt more than those times that he helped. So his effect on the game wasn't as great in a sense of winning than maybe someone else's. But those coaches all affect the game in one way or the other.
Willie, I think the point FTM Fantasy is making on Brian Daboll is he's being propped up by the work he did with Josh Allen. If you take away his time with Josh Allen in Buffalo, his record, his analytics as an offensive coach aren't as robust as when you include Allen.
Especially when you compare it to the reputation he has, which is really good. Quarterback friendly. And everybody, from Trevor Maddich to TD when we bring him on, and all the people that we talk to and you read about, Daboll has a really good reputation. But this was interesting because the numbers and the analysis, at least at the FTN site, it doesn't fall in line. Now, he hasn't always had loaded offenses. That's part of it, right?
Yes.
But at the same time, it was a little bit of a caution flag for me as far as, you know, this guy may not be a complete wizard, and the assumption that he's just going to be a head coach next year, that was a popular line, right? Hey, they got Daboll, but they're going to lose him in a year. They better have another guy ready to go. I don't know. Let's see first.
One texter says, the point about coaches was that they don't make a major impact on the game. Their impact comes during the week in game planning and prep before the 60 minutes on the field.
I mean, however you want to say
it. I mean, look, played.
I played it. So, listen, you're right. A lot of that stuff is done before the week. That's just like with the players. A lot of our job is done before the game on Sunday. The game on Sunday is just a performance. Now, we didn't practice, so we've done all that, just like the coaches. But that doesn't mean because of all the stuff that we did during the week doesn't, you know, there still aren't things that we have to do during the game that is going to allow us to be successful. Again, y'all may know, you may know football, but I'm just telling you because at least on the teams that I played on, let's just say that, at least on the teams that I've played on, each and every game, that coach meant a lot to what we were doing out there. A lot of it we probably didn't see, but that didn't diminish what he had to do. Why do you think coaches take so much of the responsibility for losses? Why do you think coaches get fired when they lose too many times? Because if you lose too many times, they're thinking what you doing on game day ain't affecting anything. You can have the best quarterback, but if you're not doing what you're supposed to do as a head coach, even on game day, you're going to lose.
615-737-1025 will take your thoughts on the Titans again. We highly recommend the FTN Fantasy Almanac, which you can now purchase online or a hard copy on Amazon. 615-737-1025. As we prepare for the NFL season, we're going to be referencing the Almanac quite a bit, and we appreciate Aaron Schatz coming on the program. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we will keep it on a quarterback, a different local quarterback, and an interesting prediction about said quarterback. We'll get to it next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. SEC Football Media Days are next week. Unfortunately, our computer is down, so we can't play the tortillas that we discussed last week from Big 12 Football Media Days.
That guy only wishes he said it exactly as close to the actual word as you just did. He was way further off of that.
Now, do we think anybody at SEC Media Days is going to top that? We'll find out next week. SEC Football Media Days in beautiful Tampa, Florida. Clark Lee, I believe, is addressing the room on Tuesday. Cedric Alexander will be there for the Commodores, as will Junior Cheryl. Jared Curtis will not be part of SEC Football Media Days, and I think that's somewhat understandable. Freshman quarterback, a lot of excitement around him. Clark Lee trying to, I don't know if insulate is the right word, but, you know, not throwing him to the wolves, so to speak, to start his collegiate career. And yesterday, Pete Nakos, or this might not have been yesterday, it was earlier this week, Pete Nakos of On3 went around the SEC and projected every starting quarterback. And Nakos projects that Blaise Berlowitz will start at quarterback for Vanderbilt over Jared Curtis. Here is what Nakos had to say, quote, Vanderbilt made major noise on the recruiting trail in December when it flipped five-star quarterback commit Jared Curtis from Georgia. The number one quarterback recruit in the 2026 cycle decided to stay home in Nashville, marking a major win for Clark Lee's program. For all the raw talent Curtis boasts, he is now entrenched in a quarterback competition entering fall camp at Vanderbilt. The four-way battle features Curtis, Blaise Berlowitz, Whit Muschamp, and Jack Elliott. Berlowitz is the most experienced of the group, a former New Mexico State transfer who followed Diego Pavia to Vanderbilt. He made six appearances last season. While Curtis is the quarterback of the future, Berlowitz could be the most game-ready by week one. Starting quarterback projection, Blaise Berlowitz. Now, it did not appear if Nakos was saying that Blaise Berlowitz is going to be the starting quarterback for most of or all of next season, or if just week one, as he said. But I did think it was interesting that Nakos even predicted Berlowitz would be the starting quarterback in the first place.
Well, if you listen to what Clark Lee has said, he wants Jared Curtis to win the job. He doesn't want to hand him the job. And I think, you know, what you do, hopefully, as a staff, you're sitting there going, if our calculations are correct, after a certain amount of time, and hopefully sooner than later, he will naturally pass up Berlowitz. But Berlowitz should be more ready to play on week one just by definition. He's been a college player for 5 years, right? This is his fifth year.
He's been in the system.
I've lost track. Some of these guys have played more than 5 years. I've lost track of how many years you can have now with all the injunctions and special waivers and all these things. So, you know, Berlewitz, he comes in, he's older. He's known the offense. He goes back even previous Vanderbilt, knowing the same offense. That said, I've watched him play, and I've also seen Curtis enough. There's no comparison between just the overall ceiling and talent level. It's night and day. Berlewitz, I think a lot of Vanderbilt fans have probably gotten a glimpse of here and there. He's a big, strong kid. He's a good athlete. He doesn't have the smoothest passing delivery. So I don't know that he could lead them to much success. Now, their first game, I think, is against Austin Peay. Is that right?
I think so.
So if Berlewitz starts that game and Curtis comes in the second or third quarter, then I guess this guy will
indeed
be right.
They open at home against Austin Peay, September 5th.
You know, you've got some time to work this out naturally, which I think it will. But, you know, for all the reasons that you would think, right? You went to great lengths to get Curtis. He's a local kid. He's going to have that job. And I think, you know, if he is at all ready to go, anything close, they're going to go with Curtis. And that's just tough for Berlewitz, but that's what you have to understand going in.
I'm not surprised. I would have been surprised had he brought Jared Curtis to SEC Media Days, because essentially when you do that, you're telling him he's the starting quarterback.
Right.
So there was no way in HE double hockey stick that Clark Lee was going to bring, you know, Jared Curtis to SEC Media Days. For that reason and other reasons, he hadn't earned that. You know, you bring your leaders there. You bring those guys that have shown that you know, they are capable of leading your program from the football field. So he should never have been. I don't think anybody would have thought that he should have been there. But what I am interested in is this, is that because we talked about this, I think, off air briefly yesterday, that maybe they approached him like Texas approached
Arch Manning.
Hey, listen, we're going to give you every opportunity to compete for the starting quarterback position. But if you do not win it, that doesn't mean you're not going to play or ultimately not going to be our quarterback. We, like Willie said, we just don't want to throw you in there. Well, I think you said it, Adam. Don't want to throw you to the wolves. We want to allow you maybe in that first game to get some snaps if we're, you know, winning by three or four touchdowns in the fourth quarter in the second half. Yeah, we will put you in the game and allow you to learn trial by error. But outside of that, I am not going to, you know, and you shouldn't want it. And I'm sure you're talking to his parents more so than him. It's your son is going to get every opportunity to be the starting quarterback. But if he doesn't win it, that doesn't mean he's still not in our plans to be our starting quarterback. It just means that he's not ready and we don't want to expose him right now.
And we know, Willie, that Clark Lee is going to do everything he can to make sure that Jared Curtis is ready. We were talking about Brady Martin earlier in the program with the Predators. The Predators are going to do the same thing with Brady Martin. They are not going to throw him into the deep end before he is ready. So Clark Lee is going to make sure, he's going to double check and triple check that Jared Curtis is ready to be a starting quarterback in the SEC. But I know there is a ton of excitement about Jared Curtis. He is the highest rated recruit in Vanderbilt football history, at least according, if you go back far enough to when people were tracking recruits, right? So there's a lot of excitement about Jared Curtis. Local kid, proven winner at the high school level. And it's not like Vanderbilt fans will be like upset, I think, if Blaze Berlewitz starts week one against Austin Peay. But Clark Lee knows. They want to see the kid. They came out to the spring game to see the kid. So I know that they've got to protect Curtis, make sure he's ready. And I know Clark Lee is also good at blocking out the noise, but the Commodores are going to have to get him out there sooner rather than later, I think.
And you're in uncharted territory in terms of the expectations. Right now, people are not like, well, Vanderbilt, they're not going to do anything.
No, wait a minute.
And you surprise. Now it's like, hey, what are you going to do for an encore?
I do have to say this. You didn't do it right. It's, oh, Vanderbilt. It's no longer, oh, can't believe we lost to Vanderbilt.
You can't lose to Vanderbilt.
Right. That is no longer a thing.
Right now, yeah, it can't be a thing. Like, you're 2 years of it, but there will be a lot of curiosity. Okay, what is the post Diego Pavia era look like?
I am really
fascinated
by that.
Because Pavia elevated them. There's no doubt about it for 2 years. And I would say that if you talk to a lot of people, the roster, the non-quarterback part of the roster, looks very, very sound with what they've done. They look really good with the number of guys they've brought back, who they've added. They feel really good about the strength of the roster, better than it has been, even last year. But you're going from a guy that was older and a Jedi Knight in that offense. He knew every nuance of that offense when he got to the campus, and he's a special player, a special college player, Diego Pavia, and that made a huge difference. So now, what are you getting? Blake Berlewitz is really intriguing to me. I haven't seen him show me just flashing when he's gotten to play. Like, wow, I think that guy could win a game in the SEC. It's kind of like, I don't know. But he hasn't really been in there ever in a significant moment in a game. So maybe he could elevate if he's playing with the starters and with the game on the line. But if you're a Vanderbilt fan, like, you don't want that to be what we're talking about. You want Curtis to jump up and grab it, but it can't be a certainty. You have this plan, right? You hope that everything happens naturally, but you have to be prepared for it not to, just in case.
Do you think being here at Vanderbilt, do you think there will be pressure on Clark Lee? Because I'm saying that because of this. If this was Texas, Alabama,
or Georgia, Jared Curtis was going to go before he flipped to Vanderbilt,
and you're not playing a kid, everybody's like, "What is going on?" We saw them do it with Arch Manning. What is going on? Why isn't he playing? Do you think because he's here, they're able to sort of hide that in a sense? Like, it won't be a national thing if he's not playing. Now, some people locally, we may be, hey, why the kid ain't playing, especially if the guy that's ahead of him isn't showing anything. But I think from a national standpoint, would there even be any pressure for him to play him if he's not ready?
It's so unique because of what all these dynamics we talk about a lot is experience and age. It's been proven these last couple of years, particularly at Vanderbilt. Their angle, their niche of how they have closed the gap in using the NIL is not poach guys off of Georgia's roster very often, even though that's the big story with Curtis. Mm-hmm. He was a high school recruit. But they haven't gone and raided guys in the portal off of other SEC teams. It's very often coming up from the mid-major ranks, finding guys who have played 2 or 3 years in a spot that have a couple years left, and like, that guy could play in the SEC. He's turned into a really good football player. He's not the 2-star guy or the 3-star guy that he was. He's matured, and now he is a real SEC caliber player. They've had huge success with that. But I'm not sure Berlewitz fits that mold. But if he does, then that is a way to win. But I just don't know that he's played enough, and he just doesn't look like it to me in my limited time of watching him play. And so I think Clark Lee has to be prepared to answer all the questions that you're going to get, because people are going to want to see the kid. There's just no other way around it.
And I'm sure
it was such a big story.
I'm sure he'll get a lot of those questions next week. I believe Tuesday is when Clark Lee will be at the podium at SEC Media Days. By the way, for our Vols fans out there, Pete Nakos projects Faison Brandon will be the starting quarterback for the Tennessee Volunteers. He writes, entering the spring, it appeared George McIntyre was the clear quarterback to beat to earn the starting job, but true freshman Faison Brandon came on strong, pushing McIntyre and looking better at times. Sources through the spring and now into the summer continue to tell On3 that Brandon has positioned himself to truly compete for the job and potentially start week one. McIntyre had an up-and-down spring and clearly did not outright win the job. The amount of talent and potential Brandon has will be hard to tamp down. The Volunteers open with Furman before playing at Georgia Tech. giving them a week to play both quarterbacks if necessary. 615-737-1025. Now, Derek Mason, he's going on vacation. He is going to be out tomorrow, which is when we do Ask D-Mace. So before Derek leaves, we're doing one more Ask D-Mace. It's a Thursday edition of Ask D-Mace. 615-737-1025. If you have a question for Derek Mason, call us, text us. 615-737-1025. And I have a question for Derek Mason based on his sushi slander from earlier. Grocery store sushi slander. Say that 10 times fast. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.